How do we know that the system of prayer?
Why should I care about the Jews getting taken out of Egypt?
I mean, aside from the fact that it affects you?
Well,
the main idea of the Jews going out of Egypt, the Ramban says, is to demonstrate that God is the creator of the universe and that he's in control of the laws of the universe. That was the main demonstration throughout the whole going out of Egypt. Mm-hmm. That God created the universe and that he and the universe is in his control. So that's one of the fundamentals of our idea of God. That's the real message of the going out of Egypt. There's a nice Ramban on that. I mean, he elaborates much more. I don't have it on the top of my head right now, but that's the main idea. Because according to Aristotle, the universe is just a system of laws. And they're eternal laws, and there was no beginning, no end, it just exists eternally, and there is no being, there's a God. God is in a sense like the ideas, he's like the knowledge of the universe. But he's not outside the universe, he's not outside of nature. He's a part of nature. In a sense, I mean, these are abstract thoughts. I mean, I can't be too precise. But we maintain that God is outside the universe. He created the universe. And therefore, he has the ability to do what he wills in terms of Hashgacha. According to Aristotle, there's no Hashgacha. And according to scientists, until the early 20th century, that was also true. They maintained the world was a static universe. But then with Einstein's equations and the Big Bang, the science went our way, basically. That there was a creation. Now when we study the universe, you don't study it the same way as they used to. Because if there's a creation, you have to study a history. You know, because a lot of things are here because of the way they came into existence. But if there's no creation and everything is static, so then you just study what is. What is has to exist logically because of the way it exists. But if there was a creation, so then there's a whole history, an evolution, a process. So then a lot of things that if you understand the process, you're not going to understand what exists. So it's a whole different way of studying the universe. Whole different focus. So Yetzias Mitzrayim is really was to demonstrate that there are laws of nature, but those laws of nature were created by God, and they're in His hands to either sustain them or to change them.
So is that our focus on Pesach?
That's the focus. So therefore, whatever we do in terms of Schar V'Onesh and in terms of Am Yisrael, is not without Hashgacha. That's why we said Yisham, the Behold of Adar, and the Mun Chalasena. And it's not just something in the past. Chayavadim Lerasasma Kilahu Yatsun Mitzrayim. The person's supposed to envision himself as if he went out of Egypt, because it's the same idea for the person that went out as for us. It gives us the same attitude and idea towards the Creator. Without that, then there's no concept of Hashgacha, there's no concept of Am Yisrael, there's no concept of a special destiny that we have, and everything that we do would be to no avail. But that's the main idea. It's a little deeper idea than most people think. But if you look through the psukim, you'll see that it's true. Because the Makos were intended to show Ki Ani Hashem Bekerav Haaretz. Because the Egyptians believed in sub-deities. And they believe that the sub-deities effectuate changes that are important for man.
And what's
in other words, they did believe in one God. They believe that there's a God that created the universe. But he's too distant from us. And there are these little gods, the sub-deities, that are in charge of different things, you know. And they would pray and serve those sub-deities. And Yada says that that's a primitive idea. But the real, the true idea is that God is not beyond listening to man, and he's not beyond helping man. And the only one that we pray to is God, and we don't invent sub-deities that they feel comfortable emotionally, but are really imaginative.
Why do they make them feel more comfortable?
Because they cater to the imagination. A person feels that, that's why, for instance, Christianity. So they say that Yeshu loves them. So it's a very comforting thing because it's human love. And a person wants human love. Human love emotionally is more real than our God, the concept of our God loving us, which is real intellectually, but emotionally it's, we don't know God. We don't really, we have very little knowledge of God except from what the Torah tells us through the being. So we have to go by our reason. That's a hard path to go, to travel. I mean, like the primitive tribes, the very primitive tribes, they're very comforting, rituals. Because the rituals comfort them emotionally. Satisfying. Yeah, this is tough because yeah, this doesn't tolerate such nonsense. That's a hard thing. That's the hard thing about Yadis. That's the tough thing about Yadis. Yadis makes a high demand. And the high demand is expressed in the Torah by Parshas Va'egel. But you see, they said that the man Moshe Rabbeinu, who took us out of Egypt, we didn't know what happened to him. He had such tremendous insecurity. So they wanted to have something physical that they could feel, give them a certain sense of security. But the Torah doesn't allow for that. The Torah demands that man relate to God, even though God is not physical, but through the knowledge of his Chachma, which permeates the universe, and the Chachma is the Torah, that's how we know he exists, and we relate to him through that medium, through that means. That's the demand of the other. It's a very, very, very high demand. And that's why very few have been able to succeed. I don't know of any other religion. The religion, not Mammonism. Mammonism is the wrong word. Islam, yeah. Yeah. Islam maintains that way, but I don't really think that they intellectually or emotionally practice it. You know what I mean? It's more like a lip service.
Like theologically, they hold it?
Yeah, like the concept of Olam Haba is a physical one. It's caters to the imagination. So they cater to the imagination in other ways, even though Muhammad taught them to get rid of, he got it from the Jews, to get rid of idols.
Doesn't the Ramban have some sort of physical Olam Haba or something?
What?
Doesn't the Ramban have some sort of physical Olam Haba?
Well, the Ramban's Olam Haba, that's the Machlokas. The Ramban doesn't have an Olam Haba that's physical in the sense of there's two things. There's the world of the Neshamos, that's one term, Olam Haba, and then there's another world which will be on this world eventually, when the Melech HaMashiach comes and sets the world in the proper proper framework. So the machlokas between the Ramban and the Rambam is when we say Olam Haba, we're looking forward to Olam Haba. What are we looking forward to? Okay, but the Ramban agrees in the Olam HaNeshamos. But the only thing is that he says that eventually there will be a different kind of existence over here on this earth, but it's not a fantasy existence. It's an existence of ideas and learning not a fantasy of 71 virgins. And, you know, their ideas are purely imagination. Yeah.
How do we know that the system of prayer is an effective one? Like, how do we know that prayer works?
Well, we know that prayer works because the Torah tells us, "B'chol karinu levav," that we know that through prophecy and through the fact that Avraham Avinu was mispalel on Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillos were effective. So we know it through prophecy, through the Torah. Can a person know it experientially? Well, it's interesting. Chazal do say that. Because Chazal say that there's a Gemara Moi Kutin that says that the most important things in life are really largely chance. And that is how long a person lives, and his children, how many children he has, or how they are, and his parnasa. Because the Gemara says one, there were two big tzaddikim, they both were mispala and rain came. So they're both on the same level. And one of them died in the 90s, the other one died in their 40s. So the Gemara says, you see, it's not dependent, how long you live is not dependent on your, necessarily on your status in terms of virtue. So so the Gemara says that these both tzaddikim, they both mispala and rain would come. So Chazal saw tefillah that was effective. But for us to know personally, that the Gemara says a person shouldn't think, or shouldn't feel that his tefillah is definitely going to be answered. Because then they'll be disappointed. So we dive in with a sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Shomea tefillah, but does he answer every tefillah? No. A person who feels assured that God is going to answer his tefillahs is heading in the wrong direction. That's an arrogant assumption, and we have no right to make such an assumption. But to say that he won't answer the tefillah is also an arrogant assumption.
Is it improper to speculate that one's prayers have been answered, or like someone feels that a certain turn of events happened and in a more positive situation and happens to be about something that he's prayed for, is it dangerous or incorrect to speculate that it could be stemming from his prayers?
No, there's nothing wrong with speculating like that. Unless the person starts getting a feeling about himself that all his prayers are going to be answered. But to speculate on a specific thing, there's nothing wrong with that. That certainly is a sign.
Is it like healthy? Is it positive to speculate that maybe what's happening is because of my prayers? Or...
positive, yeah. It's positive. Because you see that we assume, like you say, Birchas HaGomel. So how do you know really that you were saved by God? But the answer is you assume. When you receive a chesed, you assume, and you have a right to assume that it's from God. And you have a chiyuv to assume that way. Because if it is, and you deny it, then you have kafri tov. So you have a right to assume that. But at the same time, you must know that you don't really absolutely have absolute knowledge about it. It's like treading two sides of the fence.
Right.
On the one hand, there is a reality there, but on the other hand, it may be that you're wrong. You because to know God's mind is not not something that's given over to man.
Wouldn't it be Sufik Brachos Ha'akam? It's the Sufik?
No, we say a person has said the Chiyuv of HaKaras HaTov. And even if it's Hashgach HaKolius, it's still the HaKaras HaTov. Because who created the Hashgach HaKolius? God.
Right.
It would be like if a person went into a beautiful garden that a very great philanthropist made. So it's true the philanthropist may not have known that this individual is going to go there, but he didn't make it specifically for him, but he still would have to feel a certain HaKaras HaTov for a person that does it. So even if there's no Hashgach HaPratius in a specific case, the chiyuv of recognizing the Chasdei Hashem in terms of Hashgach HaKolius is still there. Yes.
Does the scope of process have to come through an interruption in the law of nature?
That's a good question.
What does it?
Does it have to come through an interruption in the laws of nature?
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
But if
in other words, it could be a timing thing. That things are set up in a certain way. That the person is, that the person was protected from, like for instance, Ashkocha Pratis could be in action too. Doesn't necessarily have to be in action. In other words, a person is supposed to board a certain ship. So it could be Ashkocha Pratis that nothing should interfere with it. That could be Ashkocha Pratis too.
But if it's through timing like that, isn't that just nature then? Isn't that not, how's that like
Right, but God wants, it's God's will that it occur, so that's Ashkocha Pratis. Ashkocha Pratis means simply that it's God's will that it should occur. So if the thing is naturally going to occur and it's God's will that it should occur, that means that he doesn't intervene in it, so then that's also Ashkocha Pratis. Because his will is done. Ashkocha Pratis means that it's God's will. Ashkocha Kloli is that it's God's knowledge and his laws. Even in Ashkocha Kloli is God's knowledge. Like if a person is under Ashkocha Kloli, so God has the knowledge that he's under Ashkocha Kloli, and that's also a part of his destiny from God, that he should be under the laws of nature.
Aren't they both his will?
Yeah, but that's true. They're both his will. That's the big mistake people make. And people sometimes criticize the Rambam and even the Ramban who held in Ashkocha Pratis that not everybody has Ashkocha Pratis. They make a mistake because they think if they don't have Ashkocha Pratis, it's not God's will. But it really is God's will. It's just as much God's will as Ashkocha Pratis. The only thing is that the will isn't related to the specific, it's related to the general.
Mm-hmm. So
in other words, if a man goes gambling, so it's his will. It may be that there's general laws there, but the fact that he's doing the gambling is his will. He wills himself in that situation. Yeah, our table's broken now. So, Ashkocha Pratis and Ashkocha Kolis doesn't mean it's any less of God's knowledge or any less of God's will. It's just how the will sets itself up. Does it set itself up in terms of general laws, or does it set itself up in terms of a specific action? But it's still, and then in terms of God's knowledge, it's all the same. That's why people get upset when they hear it's Ashkocha Pratis, Ashkocha Kolis, not Ashkocha Pratis. But the truth of the matter is that in terms of God's knowledge, there's no difference. And in terms of his will, the only difference is in the nature and structure of his will, so to speak.
When he says his will and like in this case, his timing, right? So do you mean because he didn't interfere and make it not happen? Is that what you mean? And that do you consider a process?
Right.
I'm not sure what you mean by, like, I'm having trouble with the timing example, because if timing is like it works out, every factor works out for you, that's just a natural thing. Like
right, but if it's God's will, that'll work out. See, once it's God's will, then the action doesn't matter, because God's will can always create an action. If it's God's will that to happen, so then it's going to happen. So the only difference between Ashgacha Pratis and Ashgacha Kloli is this particular event, God's will. It doesn't matter really whether he does an action or not. That's like a human idea. But because what does the pasuk say? That the creation of the universe was by God's will. So it's not hard for God to do something. You know what I mean? It's simply in nature, flows naturally from His will. So whether there's an intervention or not is just an accidental feature of His will. The essence is His will. Yes.
There are things that happen that aren't God's will.
Are there things that happen that are not God's will?
Yeah.
In specific?
Sure.
Yeah, when a person exercises Bechira in the wrong way and he kills somebody, I mean, that's not, you can't say that's God's will. But that's the fact that God created the world with a natural law. And an evil person can harm a good person unless the good person is under the specific hashgacha. But if the good person is under general hashgacha, so then they can be harmed. You can't say that that's God's will. It's God's will that man should have free will, and it's God's will that there should be a natural law.
Are there things that happen that are against God's will? I mean, if the person dies,
you can't say it's against God's will, because His will is, let's say God's will is that, I'll say God's will is that man should live under the laws of chance, causation, and then a person gets hurt. So you can't say that it's God's will in specific that this person should be hurt, but in general it's His will that the person should live under chance. So you can't really say it's against His will. But you can't say His will was specific to that happening. You know what I mean?
It's like an accident.
Yeah, right. It's His will that there should be accidents. So in general, what the Ramban and what the Ramban the Rambam hold is that in general, God's will is that man should exercise his intelligence in a framework of natural law. That's in general. And then you have in specific, you have Hashgacha Pratiyus. Yes?
There's one place where the Ramban says, like, there's no Hashgacha except for Tzadikim Gurim and Rasham Gurim.
That's what I'm referring to.
Yeah, so why is it then, in one place he says that it's proportional to your perfection, in another place he says that it's only for Tzadikim Gurim and Rasham Gurim?
Oh, because, well, by tzaddikim gurim means it's relative to your perfection.
Oh, like being a complete hashgacha for tzaddikim gurim.
Right. And rishayim gemorim means not because they deserve it, but because sometimes they have to be destroyed because of the evil that they could cause to befall man. But it's not because of them.
So Rasha Gamor there is somebody who wants to cause evil?
Yeah.
It's not somebody who wants to go after his pilot.
No, it's like Haman. Haman received was the beneficiary of Hashgacha Pratiyus, but not in a good way, not because he deserved it. Yes?
What is free will and how does it work?
You can't explain how free will works for a simple reason, because you see, we understand of nature. And our knowledge of nature is always causation or probability. In other words, that things don't just happen arbitrarily or chaotically. Either it works with laws of probability or it works with chance. Causation. So therefore, the point is that. That there is always a reason why things happen. What was your question?
So, what is free will then?
Oh, so therefore you can't study free will, because free will means that you're not an automaton. That a person is not, the person's actions are not dictated by causation.
Mm-hmm.
That's free will. He's free.
So you
can only study causation. So people who ask, how do you have free will if everything has a cause? But that's exactly what free will is. Free will is that the will comes from you. You're not an automaton, and you weren't programmed to act out every action in your life in advance, but that you, as an individual, can choose and can change the nature of your actions. So therefore you can't analyze that, because analysis is only lends itself to causation and to probability.
Does that mean we will never be able to scientifically detect mechanistically where the free will lies in that?
The moment you say that, you're looking for the causation.
Right.
And free will is an absence of causation.
Right. Well, what about the notion...
That's the mistake that people make when they analyze free will. They analyze free will in a way that you would analyze causation, because you want to analyze it. But by definition, you can't. So you say, well, what caused this action? What was the cause of this action? So if you're going to look for a cause, you're denying free will. Because free will is saying that there is no cause besides you. Not that there's no cause, but that you're the cause.
Okay, but didn't something cause you to make that choice? Whether it be psychological or...
Now see, but that question presupposes that there's a cause.
That's you.
Okay, you. You. You are the cause.
Why?
But nothing caused you to make that decision besides you.
But
when you say that you...
No, it's not a cause in the sense that you can analyze the antecedents. It's not a cause in the sense you can analyze the antecedents. Because if you can analyze the antecedents, then you're studying science, you're studying the universe. You're studying an automaton.
What do we mean, antecedents?
The antecedents, the things that precede the action, the causes that precede the action. Do you know what I mean? You gotta think about it, but it's a little abstract. Because the thing is that people say, happy to have free will, but everything has a cause. But that's exactly what free will means. Free will means it's not like everything. That human being is not like everything. He wasn't created in the way that nature was created, where a system of causation was framed, and everything operates according to that system. Man was created differently. That's the Salam Alakim. It's free will. So it doesn't come under the laws of nature in that sense. So therefore you can't ask what caused them to do it, because then if there were in fact causes that caused the actions, you would be just like a stone or like any other part of nature.
We can never know about free will scientifically.
That's right.
What about the notion, some people want to say that like free will is like a quantum thing in the brain,
I don't think scientists give too much credence to those types of
things.
Right.
But would that be contradictory to...
Well, if you're going to say it's a quantum thing, so then you're saying it's like a probability thing.
Well, quantum doesn't really have probability, let's say.
But quantum isn't chaotic. Otherwise, you couldn't study it.
Right.
Right?
I don't know.
No, you couldn't study it if it was chaotic.
Right.
Then there'd be no science. So it has to be... There has to be a symmetry or an order to the quantum. There must be some type of order,
unification.
Yeah. System. A system, right? There has to be some type of system there. Yes.
But just when we say that someone makes a free will decision,
pattern. There have to be patterns in there. There has to be some type of a pattern there. There's no pattern. So then there's nothing to study. So even though quantum denies that there's a specific cause for a particular atom to disintegrate, but there is a science of disintegration of atoms, because there is a pattern there.
Right.
It's not just chaotic. Chaotic, you couldn't study it.
So when we say that someone makes a free will decision, I mean, like, we're not just saying that he's the cause. He's the cause of his own decision. He's the cause. But in all situations, what if a guy decides? A guy gets into a fight with his friend, and then he decides to forgive him, but not because of an analysis of the good and the evil of this specific choice. He just does it because it makes him feel better. Isn't he just? He's he's just putting a one desire, like, I mean, he's exchanging one desire for another.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's not a free will decision.
Absolutely.
Even though the guy is the cause of it, I mean, but like, but there, would you say that the guy is the cause of that decision, or just a different type of the cause of
the
decision?
I would say that the emotions were the cause of it.
Right, right.
Like, a guy decided, and that, see, that's another thing, when they take up free will, they usually take up crazy cases, like, a person decides he wants a hot dog for breakfast, and then he decides he wants scrambled eggs, and then he changes his mind and wants fish. So those, they say that, you know, there's always a cause for that. And there is, because that's not really free will. That's just one emotion against another. And the stronger emotion will always will out. Will always be win.
So why is that not defined as free will? Like, why? Because
that's not free, because it's not
right.
Free. It's the emotions of the person not set, and if you knew the emotions and the quantities of the emotions, you'd be able to predict what the outcome would be.
Mm-hmm. But you can never predict the power of the intellect has over the emotions?
Right. You cannot predict. In other words, a person has access to a world of reason, and insofar as he attaches himself to that world of reason, you can't predict what's going to what the person's going to do.
Even if we know the exact quantity of the guy's intellectual power,
that's correct. Because the free will is the soul attaching itself to the intellect, and the soul is free to attach itself to the intellect to various degrees.
And it can always, like, I mean, like you can never predict like how much it's going
to. Can't predict.
Or,
once you go into prediction, you're trying to equate a human being with the world, the physical world. There's the appreciation, there's the part of the soul, the part of the person that appreciates the wisdom and the knowledge. But the knowledge comes about through different means. There's the brain, the mechanical brain, and then there's the concepts that are that we're endowed with somehow. And then there's the attachment to this world of ideas. So it's a complex matter, but the soul is not just the intelligence.
And the intellect is what remains after you die, or
what remains after you die is the part of man that is attached to the intellect, not the brain. The brain function stops, so he doesn't have a mechanical brain. But he has an attachment to ideas, to the world of ideas, the world of intellect. How does he think after that? Good question.
Can you give an example of free will decision?
An example of free will decision. Anybody want to try to give an example of free will decision? A person has a desire for a certain food, and the food is harmful to him. And the wheel of tithers of the desire are spinning constantly, and he's attracted to it. And if he would just follow that, he would eat it. Okay. But then there's another wheel of intellect and reason that he can't access. So if he accesses that, and he realizes that in terms of his benefit, his greater benefit is not to eat the food, and his happiness will be more enhanced by not eating the food, so then he would refrain. So that's an act of free will.
So why can't we say, okay, the cause of this decision not to eat it? He can go back to his cause. He thought that would be harmful for him.
You could, but the question is, does he have the freedom to engage in accessing his intellect? Is there freedom there, or must he do it?
Well, if he really understood it, he must do it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what draws him to it? In other words, what gives him the ability to to do it, to be attracted. He's attracted to two, there are two poles. There's one pole of desire, and then there's another pole of reason. Now, is he free to choose between which pole he's going to be involved with? Or is it predicted in his nature which one he's going to go for? That's the question of free will or causation.
Does that mean even if one is stronger, if one of the poles is stronger, then it's still true?
Well, if one of the poles is stronger, then he may not have free will. Like, not everybody has free will. You can't just do anything wrong with your intellect. So a person has to go slowly. I mean, we say there's certain decisions a person can make with his intellect, but certain sometimes he can't because he's overpowered by his emotions. You know what I mean?
So
you can't say everybody has free will. That's why the Gemara said, Yochanan says, until the Torah was given, there was no free will. What does he mean? It means that once you have knowledge, then you have access to free will. But a person could be existing in a way where he doesn't have any knowledge and he's not living life free will at all. Never has free will. Never exercise. A person who lives his entire life and not exercise free will.
They're just not actualized?
No, it doesn't mean they're stupid, but they could be using their intelligence in terms of pursuing the attraction of the material.
Is a free will decision the decision to choose the rational option, can a person have a free will decision of whether to choose the rational or the emotional, and the free will decision is to choose the emotional?
Yeah, you can do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a free will decision is only when both poles are equal?
Well, I mean, we don't know enough to know whether they have to be exactly equal, but he has the ability, apparently, even if they're not equal, even if the type is stronger, has the ability to engage in the rational and be attracted to the rational by working on himself and exercising his free will. But you can't ask a question. I mean, the problem with free will is everybody always falls back into the same question. Well, what caused them to do it? But that question is a question from the general universe. It's not appropriate for a being that was created with its own malachim in a different way. So you can't ask, it's not legitimate to ask that question. It's like asking a question which presupposes that there is no free will.
When we say that the person is the cause of the free will decision, is that like saying that like when you look at gravity's effect on like a planet or something, that gravity is the cause of that effect? Like, is it the same type of cause of initiative? And like asking, looking for further cause would be like looking for further cause. Well, why does gravity affect us? Like, is it similar like that, or?
Well, similar in that sense. But in gravity, you don't have any problem, there's nowhere further to go. Over here, you're going to have to posit that there's nowhere further to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because if a person doesn't accept free will, we're going to say, well, they're always with the cause. In which case, from the moment a person is born, if you had enough knowledge, you know exactly every decision he's going to make all his life. Yes?
Can you prove that certain things are inherently wrong, like a murder, without a set of values given by a superior being, like such as the Torah? Like, I mean, can you prove that it is it's inherently a wrong thing to do? Like, can the intellect come to this truth?
Yes, Plato came to that truth without a Torah.
But without like a superior, like, I mean,
I saw it too.
Right. So because it's inherently a detriment, like I mean, how they
well,
come
he,
to the
come to, they come to the conclusion by showing that the soul of man can exist well in a certain state, and they show what that state is, and then they show that these other activities are the opposite of that state. So therefore, the person cannot be happy because that's being conflict.
But they weren't saying that it's like, you know, morally right or morally right. They're saying this is the good for man, not
good.
No,
that's right. It's not a religious moral. It's a beneficial state. In other words, more beneficial for man to use his intellect, which is his greatest gift, than to enjoy it. More beneficial than for him to, and he will be much happier and less conflict with himself than if he's involved in killing somebody, where his emotions are torn and he's in the state of upheaval, and where he has remorse and he has anger and he has conflicting emotions.
Do we hold the same thing though?
What?
Does the others hold the same? Like, I mean, we hold it in the beneficial sense, and like the detrimental, but we don't hold that.
Well,
like, what's the other side?
The other side is that we hold that there are certain things that you have no right to do. Like, if God gave a human being life, you have no right to take it. It's not just. So there are certain kamishpalo akimbo. So an unjust act is a harmful act to the soul. So we kind of hold both. In other words, because an unjust act is one that's harmful.
Okay.
Right? Because then it throws the person out of a whole sense of justice, which is justice is a certain proportion, is a certain state of existence. So we have to know what's just, what's not just.
Going back to the soul, so were you
saying... But let me just want to say one thing. That the Ramban points it out, and it's an important Ramban on Ki Kurei Kan Tzipor, where he says, the Torah always says, L'man Yitallah. That the purpose of the Torah is that it should be good for you. So that's really the whole purpose of the Torah, it should be good for you. So the good is the ultimate purpose, and therefore it's very much in line with the philosophers. But what that good is depends on certain things.
Where's Ramban?
Ramban is Ki Kurei Kan Tzipor from Kisete. A very important Ramban. You should go through it a few times. It's good.
What were you saying, that the good depends on something?
No, I was saying the good depends on God, because if God created a certain thing, it's not just for man to decide. He has to know where he can make his decisions. I mean, that's the problem the world has today with the embryonic stem cell research. I mean, what is God's will? But they have no system to go by.
So, going back to the soul, were you just saying that the soul is just the thing that has an attachment to the intellect?
The soul is the thing that has an attachment to the world of the world. I would say to the world of the an attachment and an appreciation for the world of the intellect.
The soul is not something that's involved in discerning or understanding. It's just appreciation of it, appreciation of ideas, not involved in. Involved in the world of ideas, the appreciation
of
ideas?
Well, there are certain mechanical processes that you need your brain to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the outcome of the concept and the beauty of the ideas is really where the soul is involved. That's the essence of man. That's his essence. The soul really means essence. That's what soul means. Soul doesn't mean like a little thing, it's in you, an invisible thing.
So it's just a thing that hope.
It's the essence of man. It's the essence of what he is.
So what is the essence of man? Is the essence of man to understand ideas or to appreciate those ideas? Or is there a difference? Because it seems like it's
the essence
soul
of man
appreciate.
Is to be attracted to the world of ideas and function in that world.
So the functioning in that world is just the intellect, but the soul is just the appreciation of that involvement?
Well, because we're in the physical world, so our soul is attached to the physical in ways that we don't understand. But we only say that a good soul is a soul that's attracted and that is involved, appreciates the world of ideas and lives according to that world.
So this attraction is not an emotional attraction? Because then how are we able to live on?
These questions are very hard to answer because the point is you may need emotions in this existence in order for it to function.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean, but the function of it doesn't mean at a camp and that it's not possible to function because it deals with a world that's non-physical. The world that it is non-physical. So it is a big problem. I mean, Ramban raises the question, you know, how does the soul attach to the goof? I mean, it is a big philosophical question.
Are all attractions in the state are because of emotions, like if you're attracted to knowledge, that's because of emotion?
Ramban holds that way. Even though you're free to spend your time either one way or the other.
Or is that Ramban that has difficulty understanding how the soul attaches to the body?
In the Sharad Mo.
Oh.
In the Sharad Mo.
Back if we will for a second. If we didn't have Tanakh or prophecy, would we have no reason to assume that there is the existence of free will?
That's a good question. I mean, free will is a big topic. I can't answer that. Because there are implications of free will.
Scientifically.
For instance, a scientist couldn't make an experiment if you didn't have free will, because it would mean that it's pre-existing that he's going to do that experiment. So it wouldn't be an experiment. And a scientist says, I want to test this to see if it's true or not. So I'm going to make an experiment. If there's no free will, then he was going to do that. He was going to do that anyway. So it becomes, there are certain problems in science that if you assume there's no free will, you have problems in science too.
Why can't you just say, yeah, the guy would have done it anyway. What's the problem saying that?
There are certain experiments that wouldn't work out. I'm going to leave it with you for another time. Okay.
When you're talking about there's the part of man that perceives ideas, and there's the part which does all the brain work and all that stuff. Is that part of man's body, or is that a component of the intellect?
Excuse me. What was your question, Martin? See, the problem is that an experiment is always, you're always assuming in the experiment that if you do it like a number of times, that you had, you made a choice, and therefore it proves that that occurred. But if you were constrained to do a specific action, then it doesn't prove anything. Because it's just one action, and that one action worked out that way. In other words, your experiment is just nothing more than a particular action. But the reason why we rely on experiments is to say, well, we'll do it again. Or we do it a number of times, so you have it the same way. But that's because I have a choice from what to take, and I take and I make a choice.
You mean, or if it were no free will, it would just be solely on other factors?
Other factors.
Uh-huh.
So therefore it would just be a result of other predictable factors which determined what exactly you did. You didn't really take a free sampling.
Yeah, but why don't you just say that what this is it's basically, you know, what this experiment did was it showed how those other factors average out in this result. Like, let's say, you know, you did the weather or something like that, you know. So, you couldn't even do the same thing? In other words, what you're showing, like, where you put the coin?
No, you can't do it, because you can't, in other words, To make an experiment means you have to be able to be free to choose from a variety of possibilities. But if you can't choose from a variety of possibilities, that means it was predetermined that you do this. So then the concept of experimentation is gone.
Is the choice of doing
the trouble, is that the people? That's the firm of the experiment. Say, well, let's see, I want to know if this is the cause or that's the cause. So I have a choice. I can set it up this way, I can set it up that way. So I'll set it up this way to prove that it's X. But if you have no choice to set it up that way, it was just that everything was just predicted, so then that may have occurred because of a specific reason, not because of the fact that you're basing it on the fact that you chose freely. I could have chosen that. Well, you know what I mean? But if you didn't have the choice, experimentation becomes very very impossible.
You mean the guy is making an experiment?
Right.
Oh, okay.
The guy's making it. So it's not an experiment.
The choice between the different possibilities of having the extreme, that's the free will choice?
That's why a lot of scientists don't like to hear about this, because if you have no free will, when you can't, you're not free, you're not outside the system. In order to make an experiment, you have to be outside the system to analyze it. But if you're in the system and you're constrained to do certain actions, then you're not experimenting at all. But free will is a big subject. I mean, you know, we know it from Nevuah, but would we know it without Nevuah? I would have to say that probably yes, but how many people would know it without Nevuah? That, I think, would be not that many. I mean, there are people that come to the conclusion that there's free will without Nevuah. And there are many forms of the conclusion.
Going back to the intellect, we're talking about that there's the part of man that perceives the ideas,
right?
And then there's the part of man that does all the intellectual work to be able to perceive the ideas,
right?
Is the part that does the work, is that a component of the intellect, or is that a component of the body,
part of it is a component of the body.
The what?
Part of it is a component of the body. Even the appreciation of the ideas. I told you, the Rambam says even the appreciation of the ideas is itself not a spiritual thing, but it's an emotional thing. I mean, he told me a very difficult thing of where, you know what I mean, the free will originates. But I can only tell you this one thing, and that is that you mostly get caught by forgetting what the definition of free will is and asking questions based on causation. That's the greatest difficulty in the area of free will. Because every time you say, well, why did I do this? So you're saying you're assuming causation. And mostly a person does not have free will. But there are instances where a person does have free will. And the greater the person, the freer he is.
And emotions is the way it's probably based on personality or upbringing, what is making you choose certain things?
That's correct. The psyche. And the effect of the psyche. But like free will isn't always the best thing either. Because a person who is advanced will naturally go for the good. He doesn't need to employ free will anymore. It's only at a crucial state in a crisis he has to employ free will. Yes?
In the Big Mili Karim, in the one about Nevuah, so the Rambam says that, you know, Nevuah is, when he's talking about Nevuah there, so he says that it's that an overflow from the active intellect to your soul. So I know, you know, obviously it's all gets into metaphysics, but is active intellect that something that was part of Aristotle's system of metaphysics that we don't hold by anymore, or is it or is something we still maintain as like an existing being? Obviously there might be different aspects of it that we might maintain and some of it we might not maintain, but
that's too philosophical. Too philosophical.
So, I mean, it's part of the Iker, so should we be believing it, or should we be abstaining until the...
Part of the Iker, that what?
I mean, part, when the Rambam is describing Nevuah there, he doesn't just say you have to believe in Nevuah. He says, yes, or, you know, and he says that there is an overflow from the active intellect to perfected individuals. So should we be believing that there's such a thing called accident neglect and that it's your
problem? What is the accident neglect?
I'm saying, I don't know, maybe we, is it part of the car? I don't think we can probably not.
Well,
I'd have to
think it over. I mean, I have to know exactly what Aristotle meant by it.
Right.
And what the Rambam means by it, but I don't think a person would be losing his zikr if he, as long as he accepts the idea of the Noah.
Right. And he puts it in there, yeah. I mean,
yeah, I know, because it's a further elaboration.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, it doesn't mean that if you don't know the further elaboration, if you don't know the total in-depth understanding of the ikkar, doesn't mean that you don't believe in the ikkar.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very deep. So most people just know superficially. But that suffices insofar as their intellect can, accomplish. But it's a good question. Not saying it's bad, it's a good question. It's a question that deserves some attention. Yes?
How come animals don't have sensitives like they have sensitives?
They don't? In the comic strips, you see dogs dream of bone. So we have it on good authority that no, but I had a dog, and you could tell when he was sleeping that he was dreaming.
Well, I'm not talking about dreaming, but when we talk about animals, we talk about just like a bundle of instincts, and when we talk about the human, we have the bodily system and the rational component. So where does fantasy fit in there? It doesn't seem like it comes from the animal, and it doesn't seem like it's
from
the intellect either. Well, fantasy
is from a combination. Combination of the instinct and the intellect. So the instinct is the drive and the material it takes from intellectual sources and molds it into a desirable thing.
But is the part that molds it, like it doesn't seem like that's the part that just appreciates the idea. It seems like that's the
part that molds it is the instinct.
What?
The part that molds it is the instinct. The instinct molds the information that it gains, like a flying horse.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes combinations and things that appeal to the instinct.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the imagination works. It works through both.
Why does that need the intellect, though? Because, like, if
there were no intellect, it wouldn't have any product to work on.
No, it's not the intellect that perceives images, and like, the memory is not separate from the intellect. And so, it isn't just drawn on the images and the memory? And
no, because you see, a smarter person can create more intelligent fantasies. Like a writer.
So how does it come
from the intellect to be used in that manner? It does use certain concepts. It can be used. The intellect can be used in satisfaction of the instinct, because it's an intellectual entity.
How can the faculty, which just perceives ideas in the world and appreciates them, how can that have anything to do with, how does it work for the animal?
Because there are certain mechanisms, there's a certain intellectual mechanism, and certain principles, you could apply them to different things.
I thought those principles were part of the brainwork part of the intellect.
Right, the brainwork.
But that's not part of the intellect, though. That's just.
Well, I don't know. It's very hard to separate out what's part of the intellect, what's not part of the intellect. That's the whole study. I mean, what are you going to call the intellect? But the intellect is all. We know what it is in terms of what it encompasses. But to isolate is not easy.
Do you study like neuroscience or psychology to understand these things, or do you? Like,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that would help. That certainly would help me. Okay, about the little stuff.